This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
What's going on, everybody? And good morning. Today is Wednesday, March 26th, and this is your daily Go Birds morning update, giving you all the Eagles news you need to know, as well as what to keep an eye out for today. And, well, we had one day of the Eagles being a little bit boring and not doing anything, but now we got plenty to talk about with the Eagles. The Eagles have signed another player. We found out another player that they are bringing in for one of their top 30 visits. Jason Kelce talked about not being on the Super Bowl team, and we got more stuff to get into after that. So, excited to talk to you today on your Wednesday about the Eagles. And let us get right into it and talk about the Eagles' latest signing, offensive tackle Kendall Lamb. Kendall Lamb signed a one-year deal with the team, which was announced on Wednesday. Lamb, 32 years old, was an undrafted player out of Appalachian State. Has had a long NFL career, played for a bunch of teams, has been mostly a backup, but has appeared in 119 games, starting 44 of them, and last year played for the Miami Dolphins. So, what does this signing mean? Well, first of all, he's really only played one side of the ball. Well, that's not completely true. He's mostly played left tackle, I should say, during his time in the NFL. He has played, you know, it's pretty much split, actually. I take that back. That was a bad job by me. He has played both sides of the line during his career, at left tackle and right tackle. I was trying to do some math quickly in my head, but no, he's played both sides. So he comes to the Eagles trying to win the spot as the backup swing tackle that is now gone, with Fred Johnson not on the team anymore. Fred Johnson signing with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So the first thing I'll say about Lamb is, you know, just watching some videos, some interviews of him, and trying to learn more about him, seems like an awesome guy. Like, you can see why the Eagles would have interest in him as a person. And I think that now that he's in the locker room, he will be someone Jeff Stoutland likes. Just like watching videos of him talk about technique and things like that, like, you can see why he had a long NFL career. And at 32 years old, he does bring experience to the line. Now, the backup tackles, the backup job being a swing tackle, I would think that that is going to be a tough competition for him to go out and win. Darian Kennard was on the roster last year. They held on to him all year. He is a tackle. He has been with the team. He is lined up on both sides. Like, I think he would be in the driver's seat for the job. And I also think we've reached a part of free agency where the contracts they're handing out are really nothing more than guaranteed for a tryout. Like, he is not a lock to make the team. Kendall Lamb is not a lock to be on the roster. I think he will have a chance. I think he will be firmly on the bubble because of his experience, because he can bring some veteran depth to their offensive line. But because of the fact that Darian Kennard was here all last season, I still think Kennard is in the driver's seat for that line. And then there's also the possibility that they could draft an offensive tackle. So if you look at their offensive depth chart right now, obviously they have Mailata and Lane at tackle, and then we won't really get into the interior because this isn't this doesn't affect them. But obviously those two will be the starters. They have Darian Kennard, who we just talked about, so he will get a strong chance to make the roster. They now have Kendall Lamb. They do also have Lakin Vakalehi. He is the player they signed last year for their international roster. He's been working with Mailata. He's an intriguing prospect out there at tackle. And that's it. That's all they have right now. So right now they only have five tackles on the roster. And so, you know, they will continue to add. They'll add in the draft. But I don't view Kendall Lamb as a lock. I view him as kind of raising the floor to an extent. Not that he's a great player, but he at the very least has played a ton in the NFL. You spend the offseason teaching him your playbook, you know, being around him. And then if you get into camp and Darian Kennard doesn't work out, then you at least have a veteran there that you can, you know, rely on. So that's the first piece of news. The Eagles have added a player to the roster. The second piece of news comes via 2025 Eagles Insider of the Year, me. The Eagles are bringing in, or using, I should say, are using a top 30 visit on Boston College edge rusher Donovan, and here I've learned the pronunciation, Ezeraku. Donovan Ezeraku from Boston College, 6'2", 237 pounds, 21 years old, had a monster year last year for Boston College, 16 and a half sacks, 21 tackles for a loss. Now, that was easily his biggest year. He's had 30 sacks in 47 games. He is a four-year player at Boston College. So the production is insane. 16 and a half sacks, 21 tackles for a loss. That's big-time production. He is expected to be a first-round talent. Like, maybe he slips into the second round. But I believe, just from reading up, it seems like he will go in the first round. So will he make it to 32? I don't think that's a lock by any stretch. He is a potential trade-up target. But I think it absolutely makes sense for the Eagles to target him, to bring him in for a visit, and to learn more about him. Because as excited as I think the team should be about Nolan Smith, Jalix Hunt, Azeez Ojulari, Josh Uche to an extent, Bryce Huff coming back, like, they're still in pursuit and still looking for that top elite edge rusher. So yes, they do need to add more at that position. It wouldn't be the position I would target top in the draft. I still think safety is the position they should target the most. But by bringing in Donovan Ezeraku, I do think it's good to do homework on him, get to know him, because he's a real possibility there at 32. So as of now, we are slowly learning more and more about the guys that they're bringing in. We now have Donovan Ezeraku. We have NC State offensive tackle Anthony Belton, Iowa State offensive tackle Jalen Travis, Purdue offensive lineman Marcus Imbo, and Oregon offensive tackle Josh Connerly. So that's five. And then they are also, according to Justin M. of the Draft Network, sorry, Justin, you don't have your last name in there, so can't give you your full credit, but Justin M. of the Draft Network, the Eagles are expected to host SMU edge rusher Elijah Roberts for a top 30 visit. So that would mean that's two edge rushers, four offensive linemen. So slowly, things are starting to come out. And Elijah Roberts has a little bit of like the Jalix Hunt thing in the way that he had a dominant, he's like been really good in the since the season. Jalix Hunt really shined in the post-draft stuff. And Roberts, over the past 2 years, has 17 and a half sacks. So now we have two edges that they've brought in, along with four offensive linemen. So of the 30 visits, no surprise initially to see the Eagles really use a good portion of them on the line. Okay, next up. I got sent this in an email, and I thought it was a really interesting clip. So this is via Damon Amendolara, whose name I've heard on radio forever. Shout out to him, radio legend. He had a talk with Jason Kelsey, and Kelsey talked about whether or not he regrets his decision to retire, considering the Eagles went out and won the Super Bowl. And I thought Kelsey had some really interesting perspective on it. So Kelsey says, quote, I don't know that they would go to the Super Bowl if I came back another year. There's a lot of things that happened throughout the course of the season, and I think this team turned into the best version of itself with the guys that they had, and it ended up being a damn good team. And I'm very happy for them, but I don't regret ever deciding to hang it up and deciding to retire, because at that point in my life, I was done doing it. And then he has another quote where he says, I mean, call it butterfly effect, whatever, but there's more, and that's not just me and Cam Jurgens. You know, there's Mekhi Becton. There's a lot of decisions that get made that ultimately come down to guys stepping away, coaches moving on. There's a lot of different varying factors. And what I do know is that the group that remained with the Philadelphia Eagles at the end of the season was the best team in the NFL. And you replace anything from that, anything that happened in that way, and all of a sudden that could change drastically. I try not to think about it in terms of like, oh, if I just would have done that a year, I would have been able to win the Super Bowl, because who knows what would have happened and who else would have been there, what guys would have been acquired and all those things. So for me, I'm very happy with what I left when I was there. End quote. That's an awesome perspective from Jason Kelce. Look, I am sure there's parts of him that are like, man, I probably would have won the Super Bowl. Like, and I get his point. Like Mekhi Becton, maybe Mekhi Becton doesn't come because then Kelsey's at center, Cam is a guard, and they don't sign Mekhi Becton. Like, maybe Kelce, and look, he's a fantastic player with a great work ethic, but like, who knows? Guys lose it quickly. Maybe Kelce struggles, and then they have to move Cam to center, or Kelce gets hurt, and then they don't have like, I think that is all true, and I am happy that Kelce can look at it with that perspective. The other reality is it does have to sting if you're Jason, because they did, like, Jason's a great player, and I get his point. Again, McBecton, all these things would be different, but man, if you're Jason, it has to sting. But the good news is, Jason has, it seems, from the outside looking in, I'm not going to pretend like me and Jason text all the time, but from the outside looking in, it seems like he's had an awesome year, super successful in what he's doing. The podcast is amazing. And he had still won the Super Bowl. Like, he still leaves Philadelphia with a ring. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm sure there's part of it that really stings for Jason, but at the end of the day, very cool that that Jason Kelce got to go out and win one Super Bowl. Didn't get two, but went out and got to win one Super Bowl. And good perspective on the reality that he probably wouldn't have another one, or at least he tells himself that since he didn't come back. So, on the other side, I was on the WIP Afternoon Show on Tuesday, as I always am. Tuesdays 3 to 4, make sure you tune in. And we were talking about the question that's overtaken the tri-state area and the Philadelphia region for sure. Who's the biggest winner and who's the biggest loser? And got Spike Eskin, Ike Reese, and Jack Fritz's take on McNabb, whether he's a winner or a loser. Some Joel Embiid talk, some Jalen Hurts talk, some Randall Cunningham talk. So that's on the other side. But first, a word from our...
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Our sponsors.
It's a WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. It is Tuesday at 3 o'clock, which means a special treat for you. You're in for one full hour of Elliot Shore Parks with us, Tuesdays with Elliot. Elliot, thank you for joining us.
Please use my title when, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me do this again.
Yeah.
Joining us joining us for 1 hour for Tuesdays with Elliot, Eagles Insider of the Year 2025, Elliot Shore Parks.
Exactly right. So I added it to all my, like, you know, social profiles, and I was thinking I'll have to delete it, but I'll just always keep it. I'll always be the 2025 Eagles Insider of the Year. Like, if you're a Super Bowl champion,
they can't take it from you.
You're not the current champion.
Does that make you elite because you've won
the Eagles? I'm the only person to ever do it.
That is a good point.
I think that's elite for sure.
That is a good point.
I'm just going to tag you guys in all my scoops now, by the way.
I mean, top 30 visits. That's what we're doing with scoops now.
So this is, Jack, anything I get, like, does, isn't good enough for Jack. Top 30 visits are good scoops.
Yeah, I mean, so we knew one of the players.
Well, we're supposed to be keeping track of this. So top 30 visits are a draft thing.
Yeah. So the Eagles can only have 30 players come to the NovaCare Complex.
Okay.
This is worth mentioning, scoop aside. If you look at who they draft, they always draft somebody they bring on the top 30.
Usually, yes.
And those players...
And that's Andre Dillard.
Yeah, well, and look how that worked out. And I think that was a learning point for them. If you look since then, they brought Jalen Carter in. They brought Jordan Davis in. They brought Nolan Smith in. Even their mid-round picks are guys they bring in. So if you can get who the 30 players are that went to the NovaCare, you have a very good idea of who the future Eagles are going to be.
The interest basically indicates that the interest is serious enough that they want to bring them in so they can at least
talk to them.
Put a face to them, talk to them, and everything.
And the other thing I would just say is, you also see them bring in a lot of guys like a Kenyon Green from Houston that they had in on a top 30 visit prior.
Okay. So you have reported that guys have been in so far?
The Eagles used one of their top 30 visits on Boston College edge rusher Donovan, I'm learning how to pronounce the name, Ezezuka.
You don't get credit until you say the name right.
It's a tough name to pronounce.
Donovan here.
Ezaraku. Ezaraku.
Ezaraku.
That's how you pronounce it. All right. Phonetic.
That's a better scoop than the guy that's getting Stoutland's coffee.
You keep insulting
him.
Yeah,
seriously.
Guy.
He's a member of the coaching staff.
You should insult Elliot,
he's
not
the
guy.
Assistant offensive line coach.
Yeah, well, but he still gets credit for it, just not as much credit.
Yeah, not as much as anything Tim.
I'm going to start a doc, Jack, that you'll never open up where we should put in everybody's scoops so we keep track of them for the year.
Well, I'll just tag you on all of them. So.
Well, we still need to keep track of
them. Just kidding.
Yes. Okay, so Elliot, you basically gave us our topic for today.
What else is new?
I'm
just kidding.
What else is new?
All right. Okay. All right. Get them out of here.
Yeah, I thought Elliot Week was in August.
It is in August. We don't need to start it now. Yeah. So you asked that first, before we get to the heart of the question, I have another question before that. You said, been thinking about this for a few days and curious what you all think.
Yeah.
Which player in Philly sports history do you most associate with winning and losing? So most of the answers were for losing, at least. It was the one constant I saw was the losing.
Yeah.
Was Donovan McNabb and Joel Embiid, which I think is absurd because they both won mostly while they were here. What inspired the question? And is there anything else you took from the responses aside from all of the Donovan and Embiid responses?
I mean, I guess the one thing I took from the responses was a lot of people said Jalen, and I do think there's an interesting discussion to be had him. Jalen Hurts who they thinks of for winners.
Winners.
But the one player in Philly sports history?
So here's what I would say, and I'm the king of recency bias, but there is obvious recency bias there.
Yes.
I do think Jalen is known as a winner. I think even if outside the city, if you asked whoever, Dan Orlovsky, like whatever national person you want to trust that day, like they would probably say Jalen's best skill is winning.
Yeah.
Now we could debate if that is a skill.
That's
whatever.
What he knows.
But
that's
in terms
of
being
elite winner,
associated for winning.
Yeah.
I mean, that was my name. Like the two I thought of that I think of when I think of winning in Philadelphia were Jalen Hurts and Jimmy Rollins.
And Jimmy Rollins over...
Why Jimmy over Chase and Ryan?
So yeah. I picked Jimmy. You can make an argument for any of them. But he was the one that came out and said, we're the team to beat. And I think that was the, like, we are winning now. So that would be the difference. I think Ryan Howard was the best player, in my opinion, on those teams. Mm-hmm. But I think Jimmy is who I associate as, like, the personality of the team and, like, the winner on the team.
Yeah.
And then with Jalen, it is a short span for sure, but...
Well, it's still 5 years and 2 Super Bowls.
Yeah, right? I mean, like it's, you know, it's 2 Super Bowls, win ones. He won one of them. He wins, like, all of his regular season games, it feels like. But I'll be curious, like, what other people would you put for winners? In a sick way, I had more trouble thinking of winners than losers.
Well,
yeah, especially
I guess they don't
here.
Win many times.
Yeah, exactly, it's true.
But, I mean, are there any old guys I'm not thinking of?
Well, I mean, there are plenty of old guys who won
right here.
I mean, like first of all, if you want to go to the 80s, you would immediately go to Pete Rose, immediately go to Moses Malone.
So Pete, yeah.
You know, and specifically, they were the difference between winning and losing for two teams that were already good, already won a lot of games, took them over the top. Mm-hmm. Neither one of them, you know, the same thing about Jalen. Jalen's only played 5 years here, but Moses played 4, and Pete Rose also only played 4, I think, here. And Pete Rose went to 2 World Series, won one of them.
And once he came here, that's when they started to win, right?
Well, they were already, those teams already won. That was when they won the World Series.
Right.
They didn't win, he came in 79, right, Jack? If I remember correctly, he came in 79, and then they won in 80.
Yeah.
And Moses immediately, this was also a team that couldn't get over the hump. And Moses, MVP, finals MVP, world championship.
Yeah.
So I think you would put those guys.
Moses is a good one. Pete Rose too.
Yeah, and I think if you were to go, I would agree with you Jimmy and Chase, I don't separate Jimmy and Chase all that much. I think everybody has their sort of thing. I think those were the Ryan Howard. I don't think people, while Ryan Howard may have had a bigger peak, I think most people attribute Chase and Jimmy as the engines.
Even though Hamels was the NLCS MVP and World Series MVP.
Yes.
I think Jimmy kind of, at least in my mind, got it all started. Like when he came out and said, "We're the team to beat." In my mind, that's like when that era of Phillies baseball.
And for me, Ryan Howard was the guy in the lineup you feared.
Same. And Ryan was my he was my favorite one on the team.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if otherwise, and you're going to laugh, but I think of Nick. I mean, I do think of Nick Foles.
He won the Super Bowl.
Well, that's what's interesting about the question and probably why I thought about it for so many days is like, in a weird way, you have to be a winner to even be in the loser list, you know, because like a lot of the losers we think of, you don't think of them because they just like think of all the Phillies teams. Would they not make the playoffs for 12 years? Like there were a lot like Bobby Abreu, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but not loser. A lot of people bring him up because in order to be a loser, you have to at least get to a game where it matters.
Well, it's almost an what made you ask the question?
So what made me think about it was obviously with everything that's going on with Joel. Just like how his career is basically over. Like we can cross our fingers, but there's a decent chance
it's over.
Joel's career is written, right?
More likely than not, even if he plays again, the heart of his career
of substance
is
going to happen. It's
most
unlikely.
Most likely.
And I was just thinking about his career because I've been a big Joel guy. And it's funny, now that you're here, I don't know if it's intentional.
He did the same thing to me.
Yeah. Like
we were the biggest Joel supporters.
Right. Yeah. Dude, me and Euro John used to get into about Jokic when I could understand what he was saying with his phone. Right?
Yeah.
But I defended the Sixers. But I've been thinking about it since he stopped playing. And I do think he is the player in Philly sports history that I just associate the most with losing.
Well, here's the thing, though. I think on a certain level, like I was talking about recency bias, I think that will likely fade. I don't think in 15 years we're going to say we associate Joel Embiid with losing. I do think when we look back on these things, we have a very different memory of Allen Iverson today than when we did then. And one thing that we've brought up a lot, Ryan Howard, for half of Ryan Howard's career with the Phillies, he was an albatross. His contract was an albatross. He wasn't a good player. All we could talk about is how his contract brought down the entire team, and nobody brings it up anymore. Mm-hmm. Even Donovan, to an extent, now that Donovan it has not faded as much, I think a lot of the polarization that happens with great players here over time tends to fade.
So,
and I think, last thing, I think one of the reasons it hangs around with Donovan is Donovan didn't let it go for a while. And because part of it is Donovan's personality. It's not just that he didn't win, because Iverson didn't win either, right? And I brought up Randall Cunningham only won one playoff game. Doc lost the same NFC championship games as Donovan did.
Yeah.
Is how you handle it. And one of the mistakes I think Donovan made is that he was what he was when he was here, personality-wise. But even after he left, he held a grudge. And I think it allowed Philly people to hold that grudge against him. I guess I find it unlikely that Embiid will even be public enough to have comments about holding grudges and things like that.
I do think in 20 years, we will look at Joel differently than we do right now. But I still think it will be hard for another player to surpass him as like the one most associated with losing in Philly. So I think we will view him as a better player because right now there's so much emotion to it. But if you remove the emotion, he is arguably the best player to ever suit up for the Sixers.
Sure.
Talent-wise, right?
Yep.
Now, that being said, he is probably not the best Sixer of all time, strictly because of the losing. So the reason I don't think that will change is you bring up guys like Ryan and Iverson and Ryan Howard, like Allen Iverson, Brian Dawkins.
Randall, T.O.
Right. So the difference is those guys all played in the championship of their sport, if I'm not mistaken, right? Iverson did.
Except
obviously,
for
Ryan
Randall.
Howard. Yeah, Randall didn't.
Randall didn't.
But I won't fight Randall like it is. But
yeah.
But Joel has no signature moment. Well, and that's the tough thing because when we look back, there won't be he did this. It will be he never got second round. But here's the real reason I think he's number one. It's the process. Like, he is associated with the process, and the process is the biggest example of losing I mean, maybe in the history of sports, but like certainly in Philly.
Well, it's the most famous. It's certainly not the biggest.
Agreed.
Right?
But most famous, like, and we're talking about being associated.
Yes.
Like his nickname is The Process.
I mean, the Spurs have been tanking for 4 years now. You know what I mean?
But it's like, just different.
Yes.
Yeah.
But again, I don't think that part, I think a lot of the Embiid criticism is 100% valid. I will have the same exact criticism of him. I do not think it is fair to tag him with The Process.
So I do, for a couple reasons. One, he's the product of it. Like, they tanked in order to get guys like Joel. And it's his nickname. And that sounds silly, but like, if Victor Wembanyama's nickname was the Spurs lost for 4 years, like, people would associate that with him. So when you're talking about, when I think of Joel, what do I think of? The top two things I think of are never out the second round, and the tanking. Like, he's the face of the tanking.
But that's not his fault.
It's not his fault.
It's not his fault.
Although
it's not his fault.
I mean, he did embrace The Process. Like, let's...
But by the way, that was no different than what Bryce Harper does. And I, like, that was...
In what way?
It was pandering to us. It was pandering to the fans. When he started calling himself The Process, it wasn't a... While he did like Hinkie and had a good relationship with him, it was not in support of what the Sixers did. It was him... Because, by the way, I think it was a tweet from the podcast that made him do that. Mm-hmm. It was pandering to the people who cared. And that's the same thing that Bryce does.
That's fair.
You know what I mean?
But the result is the result. And when you think of Joel, you think of The Process. Would you agree with that?
I would think it leans more... probably unfavorably to Joel with being associated with losing.
Yeah.
Like, the one thing Donovan sort of has in his favor is that the Eagles have won two Super Bowls since.
So,
and remember, I said this when they won the first Super Bowl in 17, that it kind of lets us off the hook for not winning one during the time that when I played here, and now they've won two, so people get less angry about those times, and you can think more fondly on those
times. If the Sixers get the first pick, and they get Cooper Flagg, and they win two titles in 5 years, I think all of this will
subsides,
fade.
It does.
For sure.
It might, but I just think with Joel... he still lacks, like, any real moment.
No, you're right about that.
I mean, what would the signature moment of Joel's career be? Would it be winning MVP?
Yes.
I think so, winning MVP.
I think so, right? Yeah, but if you look at these other guys, they all have moments in winning big games.
Well, he does. I mean, he had three to beat the Raptors in the playoffs.
Yeah, but that's not, like, let's be real here. That's not a real great moment. It's a moment, but it's not in any way comparable to, like, Bedlam at the Bank, Iverson stepping over Tyronn Lue, like, a bunch of Eagles moments. Like, it's just, so it is a
the
nice
dagger.
Moment, but... of all great players.
It's a better moment than the dagger.
It's not a better moment than the dagger.
Well, I mean, it's a bigger moment.
It's not a bigger moment either.
Well, Jalen didn't win the game with the dagger. The dagger didn't matter. They would have won the game easy without the dagger.
It was the first round against the Raptors, and they were up, 2-0 at that point?
Well, the Eagles were up 24-0.
Right, but
or
it's a bigger and better play on a bigger stage in a more meaningful moment.
It is not a more meaningful moment. The moment didn't mean anything.
It was, first of all, that's not true.
Do you know why the moment means something?
Why?
Because people like you, who want to argue that his season was better than it was, needed something to point to. So thank God he hit Devontae Smith on that, because it gives you a moment to pretend that the season where he was minimized minimized for 12 games and everybody is completely forgetting about it, that we're not giving credit to Saquon, nothing. The whole season, the defense, the Saquon, all erasure. Nick Sirianni, all erasure. Nobody gets credit because Jalen threw a bomb up 27-0 in the third quarter.
And it still means way, way more than Joel shot against the Raptors.
Well, but it is not a more... It's part of a better game.
No, it's
but
a better...
But it is not more crucial in the game's outcome.
How about this? When we think of moments, right? Like, Bedlam at the Bank is a moment. We will see Bedlam at the Bank highlights the rest of our lives.
You're right, because Bedlam at the Bank was an actual meaningful moment.
When's the last time you saw the replay of Joel hitting that shot against the Raptors?
I know, but that's not the point.
But that is the point.
It's not the point.
To me, it is, though, because when we're talking about guys and how they're remembered, it's what you remember about them. Nobody brings up or really cares about that shot against the Raptors. You can say that Jalen's throw to Devontae wasn't important because they were up 24-0.
Well, it wasn't.
But way more people were going to remember that, and that's why he's associated as a winner and Joel's associated as a loser, because he has no true moments.
Well, he has the moment is retrospective to what happened at the end of the game.
Yes.
Like, yes, but that you saying that play was a bigger play than the Embiid play in terms of scope of the game. Like yes, one was the Super Bowl and one was the first round, but that play didn't mean anything.
Well, look, we could go 1,000. Like, if that pass is intercepted, the Chiefs, you could go 1,000 different ways.
Intercepted again, like
yeah,
the second interception.
Then we do the thing, right? Well, yeah. They just do it again and again.
Yes.
But it is still a much bigger moment. Like, Joel doesn't have any moments where you go, like, wow, look at that. Like, he won MVP. He's a great player, but he does not have the moments that contribute to winning anything meaningful. Like, and that is why I think the history of him being viewed as a loser, I think, is going to be hard to overwrite, because he is more than likely not going to contribute to any winning, meaningful basketball the rest of his career.
Okay.
He is more likely to stay attached to him unfairly.
Well,
by the way, unfairly.
But I do think fairly. Like, look, Joel is a great player. Like,
he's not a loser.
He is not a loser in the way that he is one of the best basketball players.
Right. But why is Harden labeled a loser and Embiid's not?
But
some people will say that it's unfair to label Harden a loser.
Yeah, each
is his own.
And Harden has accomplished more than Joel has.
I think a lot more people consider Harden a loser than Embiid.
Yeah. Well, I look at more of the off-the-court stuff with Harden than anything else.
Well, hold on. Harden's accomplished more than Embiid has. The one team got to the conference championship, for sure, but he's had way more meltdowns, and his playoff stats.
Game 6 against the Spurs.
Yeah, but his playoff stats, like Joel's.
In Houston.
Joel's playoff stats, everybody likes to slag them, 25-11 and 4. Like, it's not like he disappears.
They're empty numbers. Like, his numbers.
They're not empty numbers, because when you look at how they played with him not playing versus how they played with him playing, he's the most significant. He might be the most significant player ever to play here in terms of winning versus losing. Ever. In any sport.
But that's the issue with Joel.
Well, it's true.
No, but see, but like, that's the issue with Joel, because you are correct. His plus minus numbers in the playoffs are crazy. You're correct.
They're actually, you wouldn't even believe it.
I believe you.
Okay.
But here's the deal. Like, that's kind of a loser stat. If like you're going to point to, if you're going to point to the best thing Joel has in his career is his plus minus, like, then how can I look at this guy having accomplished anything serious? So, like, you
all
are right.
I know
Harden
is that
Harden's only been to one conference finals, but he was in the conference finals. Like, Joel never made that.
Well,
he just didn't.
I know, but you're splitting hairs between Joel and James Harden right now. Like, you are. And the truth is, if Joel had the basketball version of the Eagles offensive line, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Saquon Barkley, trust me, we'd be having a different conversation.
You might be right.
Well, I'm definitely right.
But here's the only, so I used to.
Because Joel had, in terms of what was going on around him, Joel had a lot closer to what Donovan dealt with than what Jalen Hurts dealt with.
So I would agree with you on that. But here's
Hold on. Embiid had a good team with Butler and all those guys. J.J. Redick. Yeah, good players here.
Yes, but
three-time All-Star Ben Simmons.
Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris.
Toby.
In that year, they got both Harris and Butler in that year. There was no real way they were winning a championship.
Right, they didn't get a long time to play with them. Yeah, so, I don't fault them for that.
If they had gotten A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith at the trade deadline and the Eagles didn't win a Super Bowl, we wouldn't say that Jalen had that team.
So one thing I used to firmly believe is if you put Embiid on the Nuggets the year they won the title, he would have won that title. Like, if you look at the teams they played, the Jamal Murray play that Jokic got, I used to always think that. But now that Joel's career is mostly over, right? Like, I don't know. You have to look at this guy and say he's a great player, but he can't. Like, what big game did he come up in?
Well, and the other thing is, we can point to, and not to slag Jalen on this one, we can point to through the playoffs all these big moments from other players on the team. Name one player in the playoffs who hit a big shot while Joel Embiid was on the team. Aside from Maxey last year.
So I mostly agree with you, but like Harden was, Harden came up small game 6 and 7.
Yeah.
Like Joel.
Yeah, 240-point games.
But Harden did win them games 1 and they were both great in game 5. Was it game 4 Harden hit the shot? I think it was. So, I mean, Harden would be the best example. But you are right that Joel never got a Jamal Murray type of thing. But like, it is what it is. So if to go back to the root of the question, why is he associated, in my opinion, like as the most with losing of any Philly athlete? It's A, because he is a great player. And like I said, you have to win to be the biggest loser, if that makes sense. Like, you have to be a big enough player to be remembered. But ultimately, he's probably the greatest player I've seen that I will think about in 20 years and think about all the losing, just because that's what it's kind of been defined by.
Well, as usual, you make a statement that I can mostly agree with, backed up by reasons that make me insane. So, congratulations.
I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know what you disagree with there, but...
I just voiced everything that I disagreed with in there.
Yeah, weren't you paying attention?
No,
yeah.
I was. That specific one. I thought you meant that last thing.
No.
Yeah.
All right, 215-592-9494. We are talking about the response to Elliot's question earlier this week. Was it yesterday? Maybe 2 days ago.
Yeah, you can see why I thought about it for a few days, though. Like, it's a very layered thing.
It is.
Oh,
it
you're
is.
Such a deep thinker.
I am. Yes.
That's why I gave you an Eagles Insider of the Year.
Yeah. Exactly right.
And
Between break and scoops.
The questions were, which player in Philadelphia sports history do you most associate with winning, and which player in Philadelphia sports history do you most associate with losing? And the losing answer, there was the most consensus, it seemed like. Am I right?
Yeah, it was definitely, you know,
it was Embiid and McNabb.
The vast majority of them. Like,
yes.
Eric Lindros got a lot of them.
Well, Lindros is similar.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Lindros is similar.
Now, Lindros
did get to the finals once and did have injury issues the same way that Embiid does.
Yeah.
Did have the sort of, you know, people expected, he was amazing, but I think the expectations of what he would be were probably unreachable in when we actually won the judgment and got him. And we expected, you know, cup after cup after cup.
The other one that was good, but he's not a player, so I don't think it qualifies, but Rich Kotite. Just in terms of thinking of losing, I think that's a really good one. Too.
Kotite is a perfect one.
Yeah.
Kotite or Chip.
Yeah, those are the two.
And Buddy.
Yeah.
He's not thought of as a loser, but he went a playoff game? I'm trying to remember.
Just no.
Yeah.
Not one.
Did not. Yeah. The one that was the thing I messed up. The one Randall won was not with Buddy.
Yeah, it was called tight.
Yeah. All right.
Bringing home for Jerome.
Bringing home for Jerome is right. Wow.
What, look at you remembering
that.
Yeah.
Did you
like
read that on the internet or something?
No, of course you did.
I've listened to the station for a long time.
Oh, okay. Right.
And believe it or not, I respect my elders. I'm like Elliot.
your calls. And then coming up next, you didn't think that Elliot could top his athletes should be able to bet on their own games take, but he had one that I heard about on Friday.
Oh, nice. I'm excited for
that. That may top it as well. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.